Welcome to the AquariMax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 133, recorded October 1st, 2012.
And Kelly's back. Yay.
Yay. Sorry, I missed you all last week.
Well, we forgive you.
Oh, that's good. It's kind of a crazy time.
Yes. Well, so what have we got lined up this week?
We have two new people who have contributed to this week's. David in Colorado and Kelsey in California.
Cool. Welcome, David and Kelsey.
And I think you are going to have Isaac talk to us as well.
Yes. Through the magic of time-lapse recording, I'm going to record him tomorrow, and then we'll release it later. So he's not actually going to record tonight, but yeah.
Yep. So, do you have any beta news for us before we start?
Well, let's see. They're eating like wee little pigs.
That's true.
They really are. And it's good that we have lots of pellets because it's hard to keep up with anything else. I'm still giving them live foods, but it's hard to keep up with the quantities they need. So I'm glad to have the pellets. The coloration is really coming in. A couple of butterflies that look kind of cool, in addition to the Cambodia that tends to dominate. And there's some really interesting iridescences.
What's the one you were telling me about just a few minutes ago that you noticed?
Oh, yeah. Some have sort of a blushing pattern where they're Cambodias with, you know, red fins, white bodies, and then they have red gill covers as well. It makes them look
they're
like
shy.
They're blushing. And there's like four of them or so that mm-hmm. have shown up like that. Sorry. And that is kind of cool to see.
Yeah. So, see what happens as they continue to grow.
Right.
Okay, should we go to David in Colorado?
Yes.
David writes, "Hey, Aquarimaxers, I have a question. I'm going to be moving from Colorado to Iowa in a few short weeks, and I would like to take my fish along. Any tips? I have a 21-year-old Cynodontis catfish, one fairly large angelfish, one bristlenose placo, and three black skirt tetras. Never done a move like this with fish before."
Wow. Well, first of all, let me congratulate you, David, on your Cynodontis catfish that's 21 years old.
That's old.
That's pretty cool. I mean, many of the Cynodontis can live a long time, but that's quite an accomplishment to have one that's that old. So, yeah, I like that. So some tips for moving. Oh, did you read this bit where he says he loves the podcast?
Oh, no.
And he looks forward to it every week?
I didn't read that bit.
Oh, I just saw that. That's cool.
You read it.
I know.
Now you did.
I did. Okay, well, it wasn't me who said it. It was him. So there you go. But we do appreciate that. Anyway, so moving. Well, first of all, we need to look at some things. Are you driving or flying? Are there going to be multiple people making multiple trips during this move, or is it just one fell swoop? Those are some things to consider. Let's make some assumptions for right now. Let's assume for the moment that you are flying. You know, it's going to be hard to get the fish on the plane, most likely. You'll probably have to ship them. And so shipping them overnight might be your option there. We will come back to that. If you're driving, you have a couple of options, but, well, it depends on how long the drive is.
Colorado to Iowa,
it's going to be a long drive.
A couple of days.
Yeah, but it depends. You know, I don't know how long it takes exactly to get there, but
depends on how fast David drives.
Yeah, and the weather isn't so bad in this period of time. I mean, it's not the worst time to drive with fish. The worst times to drive with fish are in the, you know, when it's really cold and when it's really hot.
Right.
So this isn't so bad, but it's never ideal driving with fish. It's tricky. I have driven with fish many times. I have even driven with fish across several state lines, but it's not ideal. And some fish take it better than others. So I would say a couple of things to consider. How many tanks do you have? And how many tanks are these fish going to go into? I mean, is this just one tank?
Taking the tanks with him, or is he buying new tanks when he gets there?
Well, that's what I'm wondering, too, because with these fish, you know, those could all fit in one tank, and it wouldn't have to be a really big tank for them to all fit in, but you wouldn't want to ship them, you know, you wouldn't want to take them on this trip in the tank, because you can't move tanks with water in them very easily. I would consider, like we discussed when Andreika was wondering about moving, she was moving only about an hour away, so it's significantly different, but she was, we were talking about coolers, I think she asked about coolers.
And not to keep them cold, but just as a, you put the bag in it, it holds the bag up.
That's one way to do it. Or you can, even if the cooler's quite clean and doesn't have any soap residues or anything on it, you can put them in the cooler.
Mm-hmm.
Just straight in the cooler.
I would worry about sloshing when you turn.
Well, sloshing is certainly an issue, yes. But there are ways to reduce the sloshing.
How do you reduce the sloshing?
You can put plastic bags over the top, not so that they cover the top, but you partially inflate a couple of plastic bags and set them,
you know, floating
large,
on the top of the water?
And you partially inflate them. You still need to make sure you have a lot of surface area, of course, because you need to make sure they get enough oxygen, and it's a good idea to use a pump if you can, but that can help reduce sloshing, as long as you make sure that they're still getting, you know, gaseous exchange.
Mm-hmm.
And there's that option. I mean, it does exist. I've never personally done that. What I would probably do is, either way, okay, you're going to have to make sure these fish can last a day or two, and, well, make sure is kind of a hard thing to say, but try to ensure that they will last a couple of days. So, first of all, you want to fast the fish. You don't want them to eat.
So they don't poop in the smaller amount of water and poison it.
Right, and, you know, produce ammonia. They're going to produce some ammonia anyway, but if they haven't eaten for a few days before they're packed, they're going to produce less of it. And, like you say, they'll produce less poop, which will result in less ammonia from from that, and so on. So fast the fish for a few days before you ship them. You need to think of which kind of bags you're going to use. If you're going to just use normal fish bags like you get at the pet store, or which you can do, you know, it works, especially if you can get oxygen. What I would probably do is check with a couple of local pet stores and say, if you're going to use that kind of bag, and find out where you can get some pure oxygen. And then when you're about to ship them, you load them up, drive them down to the pet store, and have them inject oxygen into the bag,
so,
and then seal them up again, and then either take them to the post office or, you know, embark on your trip. That's one way you could do it. Another way you could do it, something that some people do, is use Bag Buddies. It's a proprietary...
We've used
those before for really long trips. When we shipped a whole bunch of fish from Hawaii out here, we used Bag Buddies, and they were very... The idea behind Bag Buddies is that they help reduce toxins in the water, they increase oxygen, and they also have an anesthetic that kind of relaxes the fish and keeps them calm. So we use that. Some people swear by them. Some people don't like to use them. Now, the only problem we had with that trip, we shipped a whole lot of fish, a whole lot of plants. The only fatality we had, well, was after the shipping, several days after the shipping, so it was not attributable to the shipping itself, was one of the puffer fish, and we still hadn't arrived in the country, and my sister and her husband were taking care of the fish at the time, so we're not sure what happened.
Yeah.
It was just one fish out of many, and they all had the Bag Buddies. One of our goldfish was never quite right after the trip, but he survived like 2 or 3 years after the trip, so it didn't...
We didn't really have any evidence that it was due to that. It was just kind of a stressful trip.
Yeah, but we're not sure exactly what happened with that. But other than that, the other fish did fine. A lot of them, you know, reproduced shortly after the trip and so on. So you might want to look into the Bag Buddies as a possibility. But like I say, some people swear by them. Some people don't like them very much.
Okay, now tell us what breather bags are. You mentioned that as a different kind of bag.
Yes, this is a bag that is not the normal fish bag you get at a pet store. It's one specifically for shipping, and it is gas permeable. The idea is the bag, oxygen diffuses into the bag, and carbon dioxide leaves the bag at a rate such that you lose carbon dioxide faster from the bag than you do oxygen. You gain oxygen faster. So, of course, that's a win-win for a fish. Getting all that oxygen.
And there was one kind of caveat with those, if I remember correctly. You have to fill it all the way up, like you don't leave
You don't want to leave a pocket of air. Right.
Which means you can't ship betas in them.
Yeah, fish and abantoids and things like that, fish that need to take gulps of air at the surface, you don't want to ship them in there.
African dwarf frogs.
Yeah, because they can't get a gulp of air. But it's great for a lot of other fish, and it would probably be good for the tetras and the bristlenose placo and so on. And they come in different sizes. They, excuse me. They are good because you don't get the sloshing effect that you do in a bag that's full of water and air. It's just water, so you don't get the sloshing.
They're not tossed around as much.
Right. And so they're less noisy and less stressed from the splashing sort of effect that you get with those other bags. By the way, when you do ship in the other bags, you need to make sure that there's a lot of airspace so that the fish can breathe well. You know, it's usually something like 1/3 water and 2/3 air. You know, depending on the case.
Breather bags are better, though.
But breathing bags are better in a lot of ways. For shipping long distances, I like them better just because you don't have to worry about it so much. I remember we had to get a saltwater tank set up for our feather duster worm, and we kept him in his bag for 3 or 4 days after we got there, trying to get a saltwater tank set up for him, and it worked fine, and he was fine. So, those are some useful things to think about. Hopefully. The Cordon breather bags, that's the brand that makes them.
Do we have a link to that? Can we put a link
up? We can put
a
link up to that on the show page so that you can check it out. I feel a little bit like I'm doing this in incoherent fashion. I hope I'm not, because I'm jumping from one idea to the other. But basically, if you're taking the fish with you, I would advise, if it's not going to take more than a day and a half or 2 days to drive, just putting them in the boxes and shipping them, basically, except you take them with you. But, of course, protect them from extremes of temperature, as I'm sure you would do. Don't let them sit in the car for any length of time at all. I mean, if you're getting out of the car, they should probably get out of the car, kind of thing. And they have a pretty good chance of making it. I mean, these trips are never completely risk-free, but... You know.
Could he... If he's driving... Mm-hmm. But he has, you know, friends around in Colorado. Could he leave and then have his friends ship the fish a day later? I don't know how that would work if they had a bucket or something to keep them in, or if they would already have to be bagged. I don't know if that would work. But if he could work it out, so they shipped it like a day after he started driving, if he was driving.
Well, it's good to be thinking about that.
Or worse?
If they're going to be in an established tank, say, let's imagine he's leaving his tank somewhere, right? He's leaving his tank in Colorado, and he is going to set up a new tank in their new home, okay? Then he could have someone, a fish-savvy person who's comfortable with shipping, wait until he's got his tank set up and everything and ship them. And that could work. But you still have to worry about cycling.
Yeah.
And that's a big issue. Now, he doesn't have that many fish, and so if he were to have a really big tank and he were to be really careful about water changes and so on, especially if he were able to bring some filter medium with him that he could keep the bacterial colonies essentially intact, then that might work. I mean, it would be kind of a tricky business, but it's going to be a tricky business anyway.
Well, he's going to have to worry about cycling anyways, even whether he buys a new tank or not. I mean, not as bad if he takes his tank with a whole bunch of stuff in it still.
Well, and that's the thing too.
But I mean, if he had rocks or plants or something that was in there, but
even those could be a problem if they're not getting enough oxygen,
water.
Or if they're drying off. You know, that could all still reduce the bacterial colonies.
When he still has to fill it with new water when he gets there.
Yes,
so there's outgassing as well.
There's outgassing to worry about. You can't put the fish in until the outgassing is done, and there are problems with that as well. What would be great is if you could get someone to set up a tank for you there like 4 or 5 weeks ahead of time and get it cycled and everything, but that's unlikely to be able to happen. You know, we almost did do that when we came from Hawaii. We did. We had people, our family members, buy tanks for us. I shipped them some money and said, find me some tanks on, you know, online classified, local classifieds, and get some tanks for me. Here's some money. And set them up and get them cycling, and then later on we ship the fish to them. So that would, that's as but as good as you can do. If you can do that, it's good.
So if you're moving someplace, you've got family around, it's a great idea.
It's helpful, but you may not have anybody that you can contact out there. But anyway, let's imagine you do have a tank that you set up right after you get there, let it outgas, get the temperature equalized, and so on. Hopefully by this time your fish aren't, you know, dying in the bags there. But if the breather bags, that'll help some. And you'll have to be really careful about cycling. You know, maybe add some bacterial additives that are supposed to instant cycle the tank. Monitor and do water changes when you need to. And eventually, you have a fairly good chance that they'll do okay. And I hope that pretty much covers things. If not, please feel free to say, hey, you forgot to cover this or something like that. Because I hope it all goes well. So good luck with your move.
Good luck. And let's go ahead and take our break.
Hello, this is Ken Jones of the Prince of Ponds and Pet Tech Podcasts, and you're listening to one of my favorites, the Aquarimax Show.
Now there are more ways than ever to be a part of Aquarimax. In addition to downloading the podcast on iTunes, you can follow us on Twitter, like our Facebook page, subscribe to our YouTube channel, or call us anytime and leave a phone message at 801-477-0629 or just email us at info@aquarimax.com. And now, back to the Aquarimax Audio Show, the podcast with Icy Nelly.
Okay, we are going to go to Kelsey's question now. Kelsey in California, and this is her first time writing in. She says, I have a sick fish. I've had a 29-gallon setup for about 6 months. I fishless cycled it before stocking with Sturbicories. Did I say that right? I haven't heard that one. Okay.
Yeah.
8 rummy nose tetras and 5 guppies. This afternoon, I noticed the smallest of the tetras is on borrowed time. It's gasping and not schooling, barely swimming at all. Its face is not red at all like it should be. All my other fish are fine, and my parameters have been fine for months. 0 parts per million ammonium nitrite, about 40 parts per million nitrate. I'm worried it's going to make others sick, and I only have the one tank. Any suggestions? And she sent, actually, a video of it, so you can see what was going on.
Right, and we could put that video up on the page. But thank you for sending the video and your question, Kelsey, and thank you for joining us at the podcast. She likes our podcast, too. Check it out.
I bet you did.
Okay.
I left out all the praise and I was reading.
Okay, sorry. I guess I
modest,
shouldn't do that.
I guess.
Well, I don't mind so much if somebody else says it. I'm not going to say it. But I like it when other people say it. Okay. Now, anyway, Kelsey, this is kind of a sad story because I looked at the video and the fish did look really
ill.
Really ill. And I sent a note to Kelsey about it and said what I would do if I could would be to set up a quarantine tank. Even without having another tank, you can get a storage container, plastic tub kind of thing, get a heater in it and get either an Airstone or... And what I would do is get a sponge filter, set it up in the main tank, leave it in there for a couple of weeks, and it'll be too late maybe for this particular fish, but to have it running in there, and then when you need to quarantine something else, you can take it out and put it in there, and it'll be cycled, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
But, so she was thinking that was a good idea that she would try, except it was too late for this poor little...
He expired soon after her first note.
Yep, he died soon after, and so I would say that it's very good that she was thinking about the fish maybe making the other sick, and...
Did you have any ideas from the video?
It's really hard to tell what might be wrong with it. It could be any number of things, so I really can't say.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it could be something contagious, certainly. And the fact that she was saying its face, in her follow-up note, she was saying it was faded. Like, it's little...
Yeah, she said its face had never been as red as the others.
Right, so it had some sort of problem going on for a period of time because... For those of you who may not know rummy nose tetras, I'm sure you can guess from the name that they have red noses, little Rudolph fish, but they don't have red noses when they're not doing well. If the water conditions are not to their liking or for some other reason they're stressed, they tend to fade out. So something was going on, and it's very possible it could be contagious to the other fish. So without being able to say what it is exactly, I'd say I'd still set up the quarantine tank and just carefully watch other fish for similar signs. If they start fading, then just put them in the quarantine tank.
And what should she try to do for them? I mean, do they react okay with a little bit of salt and warmer temperature?
Well, you have to be careful with rummy noses. They're one of those fish that's from pretty soft water, and you know, be careful with salt with a lot of those. I would say, at least from that point, you're less worried about infecting the other fish, and now you can attempt to, you know, begin to look at what might be wrong, begin to try to find out, but that would be the first step. And anyway, we're sorry that the poor little fish didn't make it.
Yeah.
And we hope that the quarantine tank, if you're able to set one up, might be helpful in the future. Not hope that you won't need it, but if you do need it, that it will be helpful in the future. But quarantine tanks are lovely things to have for a variety of reasons. You never know when you might need one. So I did have some more information for Kelsey, because she, in her message, said that she was wondering about putting her palm filter. She has a very small filter in addition to the larger filter on her 29-gallon tank, and they're both running. And she was thinking, well, I could take the palm filter off and put it on another container, like a 5-gallon bucket, I believe she said she had. And she was wondering, first of all, would it cause a mini cycle in the main tank if I were to take off the small palm filter? And this is the Azu palm filter. And take that off and put it on the bucket if I have the other filter running. And I said it's unlikely that that would be the case, because the other filter, as long as it's established and has, you know, some permanent sponge-like media in there, should be just fine, especially since you have other surface area in the main tank that will also be harboring bacteria. And there's a couple of other things to think about, too. She was wondering if she could put that tank, or put the Azu palm filter on the small tank. Once she had done that and used it as a hospital tank, then what happens to the filter? Because she rightly brought up the point that you need food for the bacteria. They need ammonia, they need nitrite to be able to survive. So how is she going to keep those or maintain those bacteria healthy and happy without fish in that tank? And so I suggested one of two things. One would be to put the palm filter back in the main tank when you're not using it as a quarantine tank, and, you know, danger of disease has passed, so you don't have to worry about that. You could put it back in the main tank, or you could just keep it cycled in a quarantine tank, which would basically involve keeping the bacteria fed with either fish food, which you could do, but it could cause problems in terms of algae, because you'll be adding a lot of algae nutrients as well as bacterial nutrients to the water if you're adding just plain fish food. Or you could add aquarium-safe ammonia, like that which is sold for cycling aquariums, or other types of ammonia which are used to cycle aquariums safely. You can't just go to a store and pick up a bottle of ammonia and know it's going to be safe, because they can have surfactants and dyes and perfumes and so on in them. But if you find a brand that is safe and it's just pure ammonia, like ammonium hydroxide, ammonium chloride can both be used, then you will be able to keep the bacteria doing fine while there aren't any fish in there. So those were a couple of ideas there. And hopefully you won't need to use it for a while, because hopefully all your fish will be fine. But just in case you do have to quarantine them, there's some tips for Kelsey. And thank you once again for joining us on Aquarimax and being a new contributor.
And are we going to hear from Isaac now?
Yeah, we're going to interview our son Isaac about his research that he's been doing with our bettas. He has been interested in genetics, and so he's developed some Punnett squares. He did that some time ago before we saw the babies.
As predictions,
and now we're going to compare what his findings have been so far with his Punnett square, so that'll be fun. And, so here we go. Let's listen to Isaac. Okay, Isaac, so thank you for joining us today, and can you tell us a little bit about what your research questions are?
Well, basically I'm trying to find out, using Punnett squares, what the baby bettas are going to look like.
Okay, and do your Punnett squares examine? Which traits are you looking at?
Well, there's butterfly pattern versus Cambodia pattern, and we looked up that Cambodia was supposed to be recessive. So I put that in against butterfly's dominance, except apparently most are very close to all of them. All of the fry are butterfly, or Cambodia.
So most of the fry that you've observed are Cambodia trait?
Yeah.
They have a Cambodia-style pattern? Okay. And how do you account for that? Based on your Punnett squares, what do you think that means?
I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, it's an interesting observation. It's interesting always to find out something that's different from your prediction, because that can lead you to learn something. So that's good. All right. What other traits have you looked at?
Well, there's super delta tail pattern against crown tail pattern. And the two Punnett squares that I looked at that I made, first one predicted that 50% of them would be crown tail and the other half would be super delta or codominance, so then they would have both of them. But what seems to have been showing up is that the crown tail hasn't been registered fully, so most of them have comb tail.
So they each have, like, one copy of the gene, and it's making them comb tails rather than true crown tails?
Yeah. And we haven't seen any registration of the super delta yet, but might be a bit too early for that.
I did have some more information. Interesting thing about the super delta is that it is,
in her message,
it's based on the...
She was wondering about putting her palm filter.
She has a very small filter. In addition to the larger filter on her 29,
how much of a section of the circle does it take up?
Running. She was thinking...
So it's possible that both of them will show up.
Yeah, they're not another container.
Like a 5-gallon bucket, I believe she said she had.
Got onto that. And so it could be that...
She was wondering, first of all, would it cause a mini-cycle in the main tank if I were to take off the small palm filter?
Or maybe not. So we'll see.
And this is the Azu palm filter.
What other traits have you looked at?
And take that off and put it on the bucket.
Well, besides those, there's long fin versus short fin.
It's unlikely that that would be the case because the other filter, as long as it's established and has...
The parents, the male was long fin.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com.
For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.
There's one trait that I noticed that the parents didn't have that must have come from earlier. Some of them, about four of them, seem to have red coloring on their gills, which we didn't expect.
Healthy and happy,
good,
without fish.
So it sounds like you have some interesting results so far, but you're still waiting to find out one of two things.
One would be put the
so we're going to plan to separate them and
not using it as a
see their traits individually. So it'd be more easy.
Right. Some of them are already separated.
You could put it back in the main tank.
Or well, it sounds like you have a promising career as a scientist. I know you're interested in being a paleontologist,
which is another kind of scientist
basically than a paleontologist, but keeping the, you know, one can help the other, right?
Yeah.
Bacteria fed with American fish food, which you can do,
any
but
field of science
it could cause problems in terms of algae.
Thank you for joining us.
We'll be adding a lot of algae that you have as well as bacteria nutrients to the
more
water
if you're adding to plant fish food.
So do I.
Or you could add aquarium safe ammonia like that, which is sold for cycling aquariums or
all right, that's about it for this episode.
To cycle aquarium safe.
We hope you enjoyed it, and I hope I wasn't too terribly incoherent. I'm sure I'll be higher in my coherency factor next week.
And so on in them.
And
if you find a brand that is
safe,
and it's just pure,
sometimes you make me laugh.
Well, let us
can both be used.
Wish you all a very fishy week, and
may the fish
be with you.
Keep the bacteria doing fine while there aren't any fish in there. So those were a couple of ideas there. And hopefully you won't need to use it for a while because hopefully all your fish will be fine. But just in case you do have to quarantine them, there's some tips for Kelsey. And thank you once again for joining us on Aquarimax and being a new contributor.